Hello, everybody. This is Tom Dorsey, Tammy DeRozier, and John Lewis, money manager from California for Dorsey Wright & Associates. This is the day that we did I say July 8th?
I don't think you said July 8th.
July 8th. And this is the day that we do the quarterly updates. This is the day where I kind of shut up and listen. And we have John Lewis out there from our office in Pasadena, California. We're going to talk about the managed accounts and the mutual fund and exchange traded funds and that type of thing, where we stand, what's going on there. And some things you want to say.
Well, you know, we always get a lot of calls, John, at the end of the quarter. When's John going to be on? Talk about what you all are seeing out there and what's going on in the managed accounts. So welcome. It's good to have you on.
Thanks for having me again.
Sure. Well, you know, let's start off with the exchange traded funds that we have with PowerShares. There are three of them. They're all technical leaders portfolios. For those who are not familiar, John, do you want to explain? First of all, there's three of them: one for domestic markets, one for emerging markets, and one for developed markets. You want to give us a quick update on what? Well, first of all, what technical leaders means? How do we go about putting these portfolios together?
Yeah, sure. We have the three different portfolios for the domestic U.S. market, international developed, and international emerging markets, and we use the same basic engine to create portfolios for all three of these different markets, and we use relative strength as really the key driver for the investment decision-making process. And what we're looking for is stocks that have demonstrated the ability to outperform in whatever market they're in, and we're looking to put those best performers in the portfolio. We hold them for a quarter, and after that 3 months is up, we rebalance and we reconstitute all of those indexes. So Dorsey Wright creates the indexes, and then PowerShares actually creates a portfolio of these securities that you can invest in.
Great. And so, again, the concept is that we're going to basically do a big arm wrestling contest between a bunch of stocks. And whoever is the strongest, the top 100, gets put into the portfolio and held for a quarter, and then we see where everybody stands at the next quarter. You know, one of the questions we always get is, why do you do a quarterly rebalancing, not a monthly rebalancing? And you've looked at that, haven't you?
Yeah, we've looked at that, and that's a question we get very frequently. And we try to strike a balance between having the portfolio rebalance enough to make it adaptive and to adapt to changing market conditions, but not to trade so much that you get caught in these really short-term cross currents. And it's very, very well documented that at very short time horizons, say like a month, 6 weeks, there's a lot of mean reversion. And all that means is that stocks will kind of overshoot on a short-term basis. So, you know, they'll go up a little bit more than they should, and they'll pull back, and then you'll have them go up a little more, and they'll pull back. And when you're at these very short-term time horizons, you get caught in all of these little pullbacks and whipsaws and things like that. Now, going out to a quarter, that seems to be a very good time horizon to look at. You kind of avoid those real short-term fluctuations, but it also allows the portfolio to change frequently so that when the market character changes, we can get on to that new trend and reorient the portfolio to where the relative strength is.
Well, you know, when you talk about that mean reversion, I tell you what, I think that mean reversion is something that we've certainly seen in the second quarter of 2009, is that, you know, the first quarter was a very dismal quarter for the overall markets. I mean, if you look at the S&P was down 12% for the first quarter of 2009, and then it bounced 15% in the second quarter. So we're posting on year to date. Now, this does include the first couple of days. First couple of days of the third quarter, to this point, the S&P is down 2.5%. So we saw a lot of that mean reversion in the second quarter of 2009, and that was the rubber band just got stretched from being very oversold to bouncing back to coming back to a restful state, so to speak.
Yeah, and that's what we refer to as this kind of laggard rally, and what we really saw was all the stocks that had been severely punished in 2007 and 2008, those are the stocks that did the best coming off the bottom on March 9th. And if you look at some of the mutual funds out there, some of the strategies that did very, very well, where those guys that had really had horrible 2007s and 2008s, you know, something like Bill Miller's Value Trust Fund that gets a lot of publicity, had a huge second quarter because he still had a lot of those stocks that had really been punished. And so that's the kind of thing that did really, really well during Q2. There wasn't a lot of you know, outperformance to be had in the stuff that had performed well, things like consumer staples, healthcare, things like that. Those areas all did relatively very poorly.
Well, and that's what I think, you know, we were talking about. If you look at, like, our emerging markets, technical leaders for the year is up 14.5% or so, while the emerging markets are up 24.5%. And some of that is because of the fact we've had this laggard rally. I mean, and when you think about the laggard markets, emerging markets in 2008 were the real laggards. I mean, they were down 50+%, and, you know, that's a huge number, even compared to the S&P 500, which was down 38% in 2008, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, that was one area that was really, you know, probably the hardest hit. And I would expect that laggard rally would be, you know, more pronounced in emerging markets than in some of these other markets. And I think that's what we really saw. There was, you know, a tremendous rally in some of these stocks that had been beaten down. Our method, whether it's separate accounts or these exchange-traded funds or whatever, we buy strength, and we hope that strength continues. And when you have a laggard rally like that, obviously, you know, buying weakness is the best course of action, which is something that you know, our methodology just really doesn't do.
Well, and, you know, I think back, you know, something we've talked about in some of our videos in daily work as well. You look back to the market of 2003, and, you know, technology was the place that really got pounded the worst in the technology bubble. Technology did the best in 2003, but then that rally quickly petered out after, you know, 2 to 3 quarters, and technology was a dismal performer from 2004 through 2008. Hmm.
Right, there was much, much better places to be, like commodities and, you know, real estate earlier in that run, things like that. And you're right, the technology stuff really bounced off the bottom, and there were some eye-popping returns from some of those stocks that basically people thought they were going bankrupt. They were trading at 25 cents, and all of a sudden, you know, they're at $2.50, and that's a huge percentage move. Mm-hmm. But that rally did peter out, and a kind of a new leadership came to bear, which was, you know, more of this, you know, commodity or real estate, you know, type of leadership.
Right. Well, you know, what's interesting too, though, is on the developed market side, John, the PowerShares DWA Developed Markets Technical Leaders is up 1.6% for the year, and the EFA, the benchmark that, you know, most people use for really all world markets, is down 1.5%. So we had nice performance there.
Hmm. Yeah, we had good performance in that developed market space, and, you know, it's tough to really put my finger on, you know, why it was that laggard rally was less pronounced in the developed market area than the emerging market area. But for whatever reason, we had much better performance there, and you know, that was nice to see. You know, that the process, you know, just handled that kind of laggard rally better, and maybe there was you know, more strength in some of the areas that had done better, only because you know, the laggard rally wasn't as pronounced and developed as it was in emerging.
Yeah, you know, it's a fine line that we walk with respect to when we develop our relative strength charts, that we want them to be proactive enough to capture changing leadership. But at the same time, what we've also found is if you make them too reactive, you get a lot of whipsaw, which in the end, over a 3-year period, really tends to hurt performance, right?
That's absolutely right. And for those of you listening to the podcast that have read that article that we did all the way back in 2005 in Technical Analysis of Stocks and Commodities, you might be familiar with this methodology, but we have out here, we run a Monte Carlo simulations on a lot of different relative strength factors, and we'll draw stocks at random and put them into a portfolio, and, you know, as part of our testing process. And when we look at those processes over the second quarter, the best relative strength factor that we could find was a 1-month price return.
Mm-hmm.
Those portfolios were up a tremendous amount in the second quarter. The problem is when you go and you look at it over any length of time, and say, I'll just for example use our database time, which is like mid 95 through the end of Q2. Those portfolios using a 1 month return factor are just dismal. That is a perfect way to underperform the market over a long period of time. So on a short-term basis, those portfolios performed spectacularly. But if you look at it on a long-term basis, it's not where you really want to have your investment strategy and that kind of really short-term relative strength. It doesn't perform well over the long term. And sometimes, you've just got to realize that that's going to happen, and you're going to have to sit tight while that kind of all shakes itself out.
And that's one of the reasons why a lot of people say, well, if this relative strength strategy works so well, why isn't everybody doing it? And that's one of the reasons is that you will hit these rough patches along the road. It's not always going to be easy paddling, coasting. Sometimes it's going to be tough terrain, and that's where it tends to scare people out, when really the best strategy is that's when you should be moving your money in, because the portfolio is making shifts and in changes and getting back in stride with the marketplace.
That's right. The portfolio is very adaptive, and if you have a bout of underperformance like that, that is always a much better time to look at a relative strength strategy, or really any strategy. If you've got a proven strategy that works over the long term, obviously any short term bump in the road is a good time to allocate money to that strategy. I think, the reality is not many people want to do that, but that is really obviously the best way to go about doing it.
Well, when you talk about, identifying leadership and things like that, one of the interesting portfolios that I'm not sure many people know that we have is you all also run an ADR portfolio, right? An international portfolio, but it's buying ADRs, stocks, international companies that are listed here on the U.S. exchanges, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just briefly, for those of you who aren't familiar with ADRs, it stands for American Depository Receipts, and all you're doing is you're buying a foreign company, but you're buying it on a U.S. exchange, and they have certain regulatory requirements and filing requirements and things like that. So one of the big advantages of doing that is that you can buy it in U.S. currency. You don't have the exchange rate problem where you've got to exchange your money to buy it over on a foreign exchange and bring it back. So it just makes it more efficient for us to be able to do that. We run that portfolio with about 30 to 40 different ADRs in the portfolio. We do both emerging and developed markets in there. And it's really the same engine that we use for our other systematic relative strength accounts. We're just applying it to a universe of ADRs instead of domestic stocks.
Well, and what I find interesting about that portfolio is because if you want international exposure, that portfolio is going to be dynamic and robust to get skewed towards either emerging markets or skewed towards developed markets, wherever the strength may lie, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'll just rotate around to where the strength is, and then we're also doing individual ADRs rather than, say, a country fund or something like that. So we're able to dial in and get more granular and find some of these companies that actually are, really outperforming the other, companies in their country or their benchmark or things like that. So getting more granular actually over time really tends to help the performance quite a bit.
Yeah, and international is still a place that, just in broad relative strength is still doing well. I mean, even though IFA is only up this year, or actually it's down so far this year about 1.5%, that portfolio is doing extremely well, right, because of the emerging market slant that we can get in there.
Hmm. Yeah, absolutely. That portfolio has done really, really well this year. It's up, over 15% or so for the year. So, and that's, well ahead of its IFA benchmark. So it's done very, very well. And the international area still continues to have good relative strength. A lot of that is most likely due to the more longer-term weakness in the dollar that we've seen. So, if you think that will continue, international markets are certainly a good place to look.
Well, and then also, you know, one of the other things that we want to cover today, too, is the Aero DWA Balanced Fund. And this is a mutual fund that we alluded to a little bit last week. And what the mutual fund does is it's always going to have at least some representation from four asset classes. And those four asset classes are going to be domestic equities, international equities, alternative assets, commodities, real estate, things like that, and fixed income. And the way we gain that exposure is through exchange-traded funds. And you'll always have at least a little bit of each of those four slices. But the first thing we do is look at how big each slice should be. Sometimes international is going to be very big. You know, in fact, international can get as large as 40% of the portfolio, but then it can also shrink to as small as 10% of the portfolio when international goes out of favor. And then within each pie, what we do is apply the relative strength rules as well to determine what's the best place to be internationally. And so, for instance, I think right now in the Aero Fund, China is back to being a part of the portfolio, right?
China is back, that's right, and we've got some other Asian exposure in there too, Taiwan, Hong Kong, Malaysia, things like that. So the our relative strength models really you know, have liked that area, and those have been good performers in there since we put them in.
Yeah, you know, you look at the Aero Balance Fund, and I tell you, year-to-date, that's done extremely extremely well. Year-to-date, the portfolio is up 1.5%, or the fund's up 1.5%, while our bogey, which in this case is a 60-40 split between equities 60% and bonds being 40%, our bogey's down 2.2, and the Aero Fund's up 1.5% this year. While it doesn't seem like a lot to be up 1.5, it's still, you know, it's still outperforming. And what do you attribute that performance to, John? What have you been seeing happen in that Aero Fund so far this year?
Well, we've seen some changes so far this year. I think the international piece has definitely increased in size. We've also made some changes within the portfolio. You mentioned China; that's one of the changes. Some things, you know, to go more back into you know, more emerging markets. That has happened. On the bond piece, it's actually shrunk in size. It was really quite large at the beginning of the year, really, you know, up around 50% or so. And that was, you know, that first part of the year was kind of continuation of 2008, where the market was not good, and having bonds and treasuries and things like that was actually a good idea. You know, March 9th, that all kind of flipped on its head. Having treasuries is actually a very bad word, and that piece of the pie really started to contract quite a bit. Now we're sitting at really close to the minimum allocation in that balance fund, which is about 25%. And so I think those are really some of the bigger changes that we've seen in that portfolio so far this year. As you mentioned, you know, it's performed very, very well this year. It doesn't sound, you know, like it's, you know, dramatically ahead of the bogey, but you know, the reality is we're ahead of the benchmark in that portfolio, and we've had a lot less volatility in there this year because it held up much better in the downturn. You know, we didn't get as much of the rally, but we didn't, you know, we didn't have as far to go since we hadn't lost as much in the first part of the year.
Well, you know, I always tell people when they start using the Dorsey Wright research, or whether it's a money management account, or even using the research, you're going to need to give yourself, you know, somewhere at least 18 months to 2 years to start to see things rotate back and forth. I mean, if you look at the average length of time that even just looking at the bullish percent stays in a column of X's or O's, it's 6 months. So, you know, you're going to need to see, you know, at least kind of 3 to 4 cycles of that thing reversing up, reversing down, reversing up to begin to see the benefits. The average relative strength signal lasts on average 2 years for an individual stock. I mean, we're talking about trying to capture long-term themes in the market. So you have to give these things a little bit of time to work themselves out. And I think that the numbers for the Aero Fund since its inception back in August of 2006 really bear that out, because if you look at the return of the Aero Fund, it's down 4.4% since August 10th, 2006, but the benchmark is down 17%. So here you are with a situation where, you know, you're down 17% buying just a basic 60-40, you know, equity bond split right there, and well off your mark from 3 years ago, where, you know, being down just 4% puts you, you know, shoot, within 4%, I mean, you can get that kind of change within a couple of days, actually, in these markets.
Yeah, and people are always extremely focused on what's happening right now, and they tend to not want to step back and kind of look at the overall picture. And like you said, some of these themes take some time to develop, and they last for quite a long time. In the meantime, you'll have kind of things coming and going out of the portfolio, and sometimes you thrash around a little bit. But the reality is, when you find these long-term themes, you can really capitalize on them. And I think, you know, your point about the balance fund is exactly right on. You know, the performance in that fund has been dramatically higher than the bogey, and that's because we've had some big themes in that time period. While the market might not have been great, there's been some themes for us to capitalize on. We had a commodity theme for a while, and then, you know, the very poor equity market, the good fixed income market, we had that theme. And the portfolio is able to capitalize on that by just expanding the allocation to those different sub-rotation models that we use.
And the performance has been tremendous versus some of the other kind of allocation funds from like Franklin Templeton, American Funds, Seligman, you know, Principal, those types of, you know, some of their balanced funds comparatively over the same time period because, like you said, the real adaptability and to go into different areas and capitalizing on those themes there.
Yeah, and it's really a unique type of fund. It can do... you know, that can do commodities and some of these alternatives and things like that. So from that standpoint, you know, it really does give you a lot of flexibility to go around to different pockets of strength. And, you know, when we started the fund, there weren't many of them out there like that. We've seen, you know, some more fund companies try to offer these types of things that have maybe some commodity exposure, things like that. But, you know, I have to say, using a relative strength type of strategy really does lend itself very well to this kind of broad breadth analysis that we can do in there. So I think the relative strength in that portfolio is really, over time, going to serve it very, very well.
Well, you know, and you talk about that the relative strength works well in a broad breadth and asset allocation analysis. You know, we see that with our dynamic asset level investing program on the research side and with what we call Dolly, where we basically just take six asset classes. We take cash, foreign currencies, commodities, domestic equities, international equities, and fixed income, and compare those to see which areas are the strongest. And then within that, we also provide guided ETF models for each of those things for our advisor community and our brokers. And one of the things that we've been talking about, John, and I thought maybe this might be a good time to bring it up and people could email us with their interest, is one thing we get from the advisor community sometimes is that their platforms aren't always made as easily to be able to do some of the transactions. So in other words, if there's a change in Dolly or a change in one of the individual ETF portfolios, sometimes that's hard for the broker and the technology at their firm to easily affect that change. So one of the things that you and I have talked about is the possibility of opening up a separately managed account where the broker would have the ability to would have the ability to tell us what percentage they wanted in a Dolly portfolio, and then we would affect all the trades for them, right?
Mm-hmm. Right, or in, you know, some of the other models that we have. So if you had clients with different needs or different investment allocation needs, you could kind of set those up as you wanted, and then we could just make the changes all flow through on our end. So I think that would be a pretty exciting type of product, you know, if we could get, you know, emails or something, if you're interested in that, then we can kind of gauge, you know, whether that would be something that people would be interested in and how we would go about implementing that.
That's right, yeah.
And then that, and as you mentioned, that could extend right to our guided models that we have under the ETF portfolio. Because a lot of these brokers, they have a very difficult time trying to market and build relationships and develop relationships and talk to clients and then also execute and do the guided models and whatnot that we provide for them. And like Tammy said, some of their platforms are just not conducive to really doing a good job on that part of it. And I think this is a unique opportunity that I think relatively inexpensively have these things executed and taken care of right with you guys in California and do it under a separately managed account program.
Right, and it would not only be just the execution. I mean, I think we could also provide the type of platform where you could very, very easily make changes to your client asset allocations depending on their needs or depending on what happens in the market. So if you need to raise some cash in the account, you know, you would just be able to put new percentages in there and very quickly and easily be able to do that.
That would be fantastic because it's usually
going through all the nitty-gritty of, you know, allocating trades on your system and this type of thing. So, I mean, I think it would be, you could think about it more like your own unified managed account that you could run how you wanted it, you could allocate how you wanted it, and then we would do, you know, all the back end work on it.
I love it.
Yeah.
I think that if I was back in production again, that's definitely the direction that I'd be going.
Right.
Yeah, so you know, like we said, if people are out there listening to podcasts and there's interest in that, you know, make sure to email Tammy or email the Richmond office, and we'll kind of take all those suggestions and things and you know, kind of brainstorm about how best to implement that type of thing.
Yeah, because, you know, one of the interesting things, you know, having been an advisor myself, you know, for a number of years back in the 70s, I think about the daily life of an advisor, and it's a pretty tough life. And you have a lot of things that you have to do, a lot of hats that you have to wear. One of the things you have to do is you have to become, you know, you got to find religion at some point in time on Wall Street, and you got to embrace some sort of strategy. And we have so many people, so many firms that embrace what we do, have learned what we do, have read my book, and understand it thoroughly, and can articulate it to prospects and customers. But then when it comes time to actually sit down and execute and try to manage it in that way, it really would be much more helpful if they had a way of doing it inexpensively and just handling it under a separate managed account. And when you were just talking about that, being able to tell you how they wanted it and be able to raise cash when they wanted easily and that type of thing, man, this is like a whole new... It's a whole new avenue, I think, on Wall Street. It really just kind of hit me between the eyes just now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think it's very forward-thinking in order to essentially you and the separately managed account manager are working together hand in hand. You're taking the guided models, and then instead of just, you know, sending the money there and not having a say in how it's allocated or anything for a client's account, you can put it in one place and do all of it at one spot, and you work together as a team. And I think that's very innovative.
That's the way I'd go if I was back in production, no question about it.
So yeah, like John said, send me an email to Tammy@DorseyWright.com if you think you might be interested in that. Yeah, that helps us gauge, you know, are we on the right track? Maybe we're completely on the wrong track.
Maybe somebody's got some other ideas.
Yeah, or other ideas. Mm.
Yeah, and that's the thing, because it is very innovative, but innovative always means new, and, you know, it's kind of our ideas, but, you know, since this kind of thing really hasn't been done before, you know, maybe there's something that we're really missing that we should include, or maybe this, you know, isn't of interest, but something else is. So, you know, always in those kind of, quote, innovative products, it's always great to get, you know, initial feedback to find out if you're, you know, if what you think is really going to work is really what the field thinks is going to work.
Well, John, I want to thank you very much for coming on today. It's always a pleasure to talk to you and hear about the things that you all see going on in the relative strength world as well.
And also, anybody that listens to the podcast or anytime they listen to this podcast, feel free to email the link out to anybody that you know. Put it on your email blast. Send it anywhere you want to send it. Send it up to YouTube or wherever. YouTube's all for visual, though.
Yeah, YouTube's all visual.
Yeah, that's visual. That's where we do our... Morning Monday.
That's right. That's what we're doing. Monday.
We gotta send some of those up there.
Yeah. I don't know. I thought we were gonna be sending one up this Monday with you, Tommy, and we were sitting in here, and I don't know. I must have hit your chair. You did something, and I thought the chair was going ever backwards.
Oh, yeah. I was gonna say that would be a great YouTube. Yeah.
That would have been a good YouTube.
Crashing on the floor. That one will get some visits.
That's right. That would get some visits. So, well, John, thanks a lot. Thank all of you all for being on the podcast, and we'll be back with you next Wednesday.
All right. Thanks.